Unloved. Adam, sometimes I miss our old intro.
Yes.
I totally would have done a joke about you changing your name to Tim Shaw.
Honestly, that is like that is one of the high points, absolute high points. Not only Tim Shaw, but the whole like misunderstanding behind it. I swear I've been that way before. What's your name? Okay, I'm just gonna call you this.
Tim Shaw. And that it just stuck the whole time. And the amount of times that she continued to say it. I love that. That may be my favorite gag from the entire episode.
I hope that there's stuff like that in every episode, because honestly, like, yeah, that was I laugh every time I watch the episode. Every time that comes up, I laugh.
Well, the moment we have all been waiting for. Doctor Who is officially back. New episodes. We've already seen the first episode of the new Doctor. There's a lot to talk about. I was just at New York Comic Con. I actually was in the same room as Jodie Whittaker, which is pretty awesome. So we got some things to talk about, Adam.
Yeah, we do. Can you believe it? Like we've made it. This is, yeah, it was a long time coming, and it feels so good to have it back. I've been stoked. This has been so fun. The wait was terrible. They kept it spoiler free as much as they possibly could. And there's so much that like I still have no idea what this season holds. But the first episode, we got it. It's here. We've watched it.
Yeah. In the lead up, we had trailers. We talked about the trailer in our last episode. We had talked about that leaked clip. And they finally did officially release that leaked clip. I think we haven't talked since then.
No.
So it's out there. So for anyone who was avoiding that episode, you know, obviously you can now go back and listen to our commentary specifically on that one train scene, because we have a whole episode about it. So you can go back and listen to that now because it's no longer a spoiler. But yeah, the lead up was really interesting, and then we started to get some images, and we weren't doing a too much dissection, but there was a little thing, you know. For example, I texted you the picture of Graham and Grace.
Yeah.
And you can see kind of her hand on his chest, and we're like, oh, it looks like they're married, you know, that type of thing. So we were starting to figure out some pieces before they even aired the episode. And then some of that stuff was confirmed. I think there was a lot of surprise.
Can I just say that I think you are much better at that dissection part of it than I am? Because now that we are where we are and we've watched the first episode and we know a lot more about who the characters are and where they come from, I think back at some of the things I said, and whether we recorded them or not, or if it was just us in conversation where I mentioned, hey, I think this is what this is, I'm like off on all of it. I was totally wrong about so many different things. They're not college students. Graham is not the professor. There's just so many things that I was wrong about.
I think we were wrong about a number of things, as you would expect. I mean, you're basically kind of going off of blind speculation. It's fun to talk about things. It's fun to speculate. But yeah, mostly you get things wrong, which is good. We wouldn't want things to be too predictable, right?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But
I think you got a couple things right.
I'd like to be right.
I think you got a couple things right, and we'll talk about it when we start to get into the specific episode about some things that I think you did get right and some things that we were definitely wrong about. Before we do get into the main topic of the episode, which is the woman who fell to Earth, we did want to give a quick little recap about my travels up to New York City, going to New York Comic Con, because there was some Doctor Who stuff that went on up there.
There was some Doctor Who stuff, and there was one thing in particular that I have to say it was special. It was very special. I wasn't there, but there was a moment in time that was incredible.
I'm glad that it worked out so well. That was kind of a thing that I wasn't sure I was going to do, but I did it and it worked out. And so leading up to the con, I was looking at all the things that were going on. So we had talked before on our show about the panel that they were going to do with Matt Smith, David Tennant, and Alex Kingston, and that it was a paid panel. You had to pay extra on top of what you had already paid to get into the con just to go to this thing. So I was on the edge if I was going to go to it or not, if I wanted to pay the money, if I even knew anyone that would go with me. I even went as far as trying to convince you to fly out here to go with me,
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
which didn't work out. But it ended up working out okay because I couldn't find anyone to go with me. I didn't want to go by myself. The ticket prices were, they actually dropped, I think, after kind of the initial, outrage, not outrage, but the initial annoyance, I guess, from fans saying, oh, you're charging so much.
They heard our podcast.
Yeah, right. So they did drop the prices a little bit. So you could get a ticket for about $62. So I went in, looked at it, thought about it. Then I went to put it in the shopping cart when you're going to check out online. And then they tack on like a $25 like fee on top of the 60 something dollars. And so that kind of sealed it for me. I'm not going to do this thing. I had already seen Tenet before. I'd already seen Smith before. I'd seen Alex Kingston in different panels. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to spend this money to go by myself to see them at New York Comic Con. So that was out. Didn't do that. But I did spend ridiculous amount of money on something else, which was to go get a picture with David Tennant, because I noticed that David Tennant and Matt Smith were both doing photo ops at the con, and I have never done a big photo op with anyone, with any kind of notable actor. So I was like, you know what? Why not? Like one time in my life, why don't I? Since David Tennant and Matt Smith are two actors that I would just love to stand next to at some point in my life and maybe have a short conversation with. I was like, why don't I spend the money? So I did. I spent the money, went online, bought the ticket to get a picture with specifically David Tennant. He won out because Matt Smith's picture times didn't work out with my schedule. Matt Smith needs to change his schedule for me. So so I did that. So I signed up for the thing with David Tennant, and I went and got a photo op with David Tennant, which was pretty awesome. And the experience was interesting. I don't know if anyone, Adam, I'm assuming you've never done kind of a photo op
No,
with one of these bigger
I've
celebrities.
never done it. I've seen things, I've heard stories about how it's basically a cattle corral, but tell me about
Yes.
your experience.
So yeah, just for the fans out there, I don't know if this is going to excite people about this process or just ruin it, and maybe people won't want to do this. For me, it was worth it, but it's not cheap, especially these type of actors at this level. Pretty much anyone at New York Comic Con, they kind of elevate the price. But if you have someone like a David Tennant's level, especially since he's got current projects going on right now, so he's still very relevant.
Yeah, good omens.
Yeah, Good Omens, by the way. The trailer for that looks amazing. I think I'm gonna watch that show.
It looks fun.
But yeah, so I forked out the money, which if you're wondering how much something like that costs, it's $100 to get a picture with
Snap.
David Tennant. So this is kind of like a one-time thing for me. I don't think I'm gonna make a habit of this, but they actually had it organized really well, so it's not a long wait. It was about a 20-minute wait for me to be in my group. They break it down in these groups, and when I got up there, they kind of prepare you for how quick it's gonna be, and you get up there, you wait in one line, then you move to another line, then move to another line. But the whole process really doesn't take much longer than like 20 to 30 minutes, and when you start to get closer to where he's at, like it's all really curtained off, really right up until the moment you get up to for your picture, you really don't see him. And but then when you do kind of break through that curtain and there's like three or four people in front of you, you start to realize how fast it's going to be. And you see, like, they call up the next person and the next person, it's like boom, snap, picture, gone. Next person, boom, snap, picture, gone. And if anyone tries to say like more than two words to him, they cut them off. Not that, David Tennant doesn't cut him off. David Tennant's nice, he's smiling. But the other people, the staff of the
Yeah.
convention, they're, kind of like, like this one guy, probably two people ahead of me, started to say, oh, Mr. Tennant, I really enjoyed you in this and it really meant a lot to me because of, and then like before he even got the sentence out of his mouth, one of the workers was like, nope, turn around, look at the camera, picture, okay, move on, go. So
Nice.
he didn't even get to like do the thing. So it really is very, very much like you said, a cattle call. Like you're just boom, boom, boom. I don't think I stood next to him for more than 5 to 7 seconds. But it was still cool. I got to see him, got to stand next to him, got to put my arm around him. He looked at me. It wasn't like he was kind of, he looked me in the eyes. So that was kind of cool. And I had prepared as a surprise for you. I had printed out a little piece of paper that said, "Hi, Adam," on it, hoping, I wasn't sure they're going to even let me do this, but I was hoping that they would just let me give him a prop to hold while I took his picture. So I kind of hid it so they wouldn't see it, because I didn't want them to call me out earlier in the line and be like, "No, you can't do that." So I hid it next, you know, kind of next to me, and kind of had it rolled up in my hand. And then as I'm walking up to David Tennant, I just hold this thing up and show him. I'm like, "Hey, do you mind holding this so you can say hi to my friend Adam?" And he's like, "Oh, sure." You know, like in his cool accent that I can't imitate. And so he grabs the paper out of my hand, turns toward the camera. We put our arm around each other, holds the thing up. He puts like this, you know, kind of funny expression on his face. Snap the picture. I say, "Thank you." He shakes my hand and I walk away.
I like, honestly though, I have the picture up in front of me. It's the avatar of most of my social media profiles right now. And every time I look at it, I just feel giddy. Like, I'm not in the picture. All it says is hi, Adam. And that could be any Adam. But like, I like, every time I look at it, I smile and my cheeks hurt. I mean, you did me a solid in that situation, and I can't thank you enough. And hearing about your experience, honestly, like, yeah, it might be quick and stuff, but it sounds like it still was pretty fun.
It was fun. It was worth it. If you can afford it, it's definitely worth it to kind of do something like that at least once. I think I might try to do the same thing with Matt Smith at some point. I'm not going to make a habit of it and go, you know, dropping tons of money every time I go to one of these conventions. But if one of those guys is around and I haven't gotten a picture with them yet, you know, maybe Smith, maybe even Jodie Whittaker in the future. So maybe I can get maybe the modern doctors, but it was cool enough. And you do get a quick moment with them. You do make some sort of a connection. He got to do the whole hi Adam, which was cool. And that's going to be out there forever. You know, we have that picture now.
Yeah.
So I thought in the end, I thought it was really worth it. And it was kind of a cool moment. And if you think about it, that little sign says hi Adam, but you know, Photoshop can make that little sign say anything.
It's a white piece of
paper.
So many opportunities here.
I was thinking about doing a Photoshop where it says something like, you know, Bad Wolf Radio is my favorite podcast or something like that, you know, and put it on our Instagram. So that was my David Tennant photo op experience. I also got to go to a screening of the episode.
That is awesome.
Which I got to see that on Sunday, the same time it aired. It was like a, you know, the global release, so everybody got to see it at the same time. So when it came on TV, it was the same time they started it at Madison Square Garden. So we got to watch it there. And then
how many people were there? Sorry,
I'm not sure the size of the room. The room I was in, imagine like if you're going to like a Broadway show, you know, a giant auditorium with a balcony.
Yeah.
And every seat was full.
That would be fun.
Imagine just a room full of Doctor Who fans, and then you get to watch an episode with them, and then Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall walk out on stage after.
That would be cool.
Yeah. So it was a cool experience to get to do that and get to kind of, and we went really early in the morning to make sure we got in. So we actually got to sit right in the very front of the whole auditorium.
Okay.
You know, we were kind of in the, you know, if you were at a concert, you know, kind of the area at the, I forget the term for it, but that area that's kind of right in front of the stage.
Yeah, the orchestra.
Yeah, so we were.
Well,
yeah,
that's
we
a
were
Broadway
in,
show.
Yeah, we were in that section. So we were very close to the stage. I had a great view of the screen to watch the episode, and then had a great view of the stage for the Q&A, and got to see Jodie Whittaker kind of like live and in person right on stage in front of me, which was really cool because I had never seen her at an event before. So, yeah. It was good times. Good times at New York Comic Con. You got to come with me one of these days.
Yep, we talked about it. I'm working to make that happen, right? 2019?
Yep. Let's do it.
Meet us there. We'll do live recordings.
Hopefully, yeah. And we get, the other thing that didn't pan out is they did, because I had media access to the convention, I actually got invited to participate in interviews with Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall. But they sent out the invite to pretty much anyone who had media access. So you had to basically RSVP, and then they told you if you were worthy or not. So I did RSVP for the opportunity. They quickly responded and said I was not worthy. So I did not get a chance to interview her in person. But I don't know if I would have, you know, I don't know. It's probably better that they didn't let me do that. I'm not sure I'm ready for that. I don't know if I would have handled it too well.
See, that it all it takes is for our listeners to make us worthy. Make us worthy and we have that opportunity, right?
Yes. Although, I mean, if you search for Doctor Who on iTunes right now, we're like the top match. So, we're a legit podcast now, Adam, 5 years
We're
later.
coming. We're coming.
So
Bad Wolf
maybe
Radio is
sometime in the
coming.
future, maybe by next New York Comic Con, if you join me, then maybe we can get approved for interviews. But so
Awesome.
it was a good time, and now we've both seen the episode. I think I've seen it 3 times. I don't know, how many times have you seen it now?
I've done two in bits and pieces.
Okay.
I've done two, and then I've watched bits and pieces. That's a better way of putting it.
So we've watched it without subtitles, we've watched it with subtitles. We're ready. If we can the lines we couldn't understand, we got to read.
Yes.
So we are ready to talk about The Woman Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah. Let's jump in.
All right, series 11, episode 1. This one was written by Chris Chibnall. So make you know, which is cool because it's kind of like in the tradition of Stephen Moffat, he's not going to let the other writers write the first episode. So we got Chris Chibnall. We got to see kind of how he writes. This one was directed by Jamie Childs, and it obviously premiered on October 7th. And this was long, a long episode. Was it 60? I think it was like 62, 64 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, hour and 4 minutes.
Yeah, so an hour and 4 minutes is a lot longer than 40. 40 minutes is what we used to get with Doctor Who episodes.
Yeah, it threw me off first time. I sat down to watch it during a lunch break that I took, and it was like, oh wow, this is longer than I expected. I need to stay focused.
Which I think, we can talk about the longer running time. I think it made a big difference.
Oh,
It
it
felt like they
absolutely
were
did.
able to really let the story breathe and not, it didn't feel like anything was rushed. You really got to, you got a lot of time with the characters and they really got to flesh out the story. I thought it was perfect to add that, kind of extra 15 to 20 minutes, made all the difference. So I'm glad that this is kind of, the standard for all of these episodes for the entire season is, to expect these longer episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of those things that it was my second time watching it through that I really started to pick up on is that it felt like the pacing of it was fairly quick. The scenes were transitioning quickly. The interactions that the characters had were moving quickly. Everything was happening quickly. And then all of a sudden you just get this period where it would slow down. And it's like you'd have this moment of breathing time, and there would be a little bit more of a conversation, and then the pace would pick back up. So it wasn't just like this long drawn out experience, but it also wasn't just moving so quickly that you didn't have time to really hunker down on what was happening or who the characters were. Yeah, I thought the timing of it didn't feel like it was long. It felt like it was good, which was exactly what I wanted.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm excited for that change. There's a lot about this. I know we were leading up to this season, we were both kind of on the same page where we just felt like everything we were seeing was good stuff and we were really excited about the season. And now we've seen the first episode and it did not disappoint for me. I mean, just in the way that it looked on screen, kind of the cinematography, the acting, the characters and how they decided to portray the characters. There wasn't a lot that I could nitpick at. I mean, there's a couple things I'll bring up as we're talking about it, but I was just, and you know me, I'm the one to typically be a little bit more critical of these episodes than you are. And I was just like, wow, it was like they've, got into my brain and figured out what I wanted to see, and they did it.
There's one scene or group of scenes in particular that stuck out to me as in like, I don't ever remember seeing anything like this before in any previous episodes, but it's where you have the overhead tracking shot of the courier van. And like first you get in front of it and then you get above it and you kind of track it along the ways. It's something super small, but in my memory, as I'm thinking back through previous episodes, that's just a camera shot. That's just a type of shot that I don't think we've really seen in Doctor Who. And it felt very modern. It felt very like normal TV, if you will, like something that you'd expect from maybe one of the new Marvel Netflix shows or something along those lines, where it works. It's a nice shot, but we don't normally see that in Doctor Who.
And I know I felt that way when they released 11th Hour and Matt Smith's first episode, and I felt like there was really a big jump in production value between kind of the end of Tennant's era and the beginning of Smith's, and you got a new showrunner, and you could just tell the differences and the difference in visual presentation. And I remember just thinking, okay, this is a modern show now. I always felt like when I was watching the David Tennant episodes, everything felt a little old. It felt a little hokey. And when it got to Smith, I felt like, okay, they've really caught up to the times, and it looks like other TV that I watch.
Yeah.
And I felt like they stayed pretty consistent with that. I never felt like Doctor Who was behind the times or anything. But now, when I saw this episode, suddenly, like you said, it kind of felt like I was watching like one of the new Netflix shows. Or another thing I would compare it to is Broadchurch. When I, watching Broadchurch, the other Chris Chibnall show. Where it just looked different. It looked newer. It looked fresher. Everything looked
Yeah.
better in a way. And it almost made me feel bad, to say, it makes me feel bad to say that it looked better, because I didn't really think that, the Capaldi era or the Smith era looked bad. But now I'm
Yeah.
just like, oh wow, I really like this style.
Well, it like to me it's kind of like when you get a new TV. Like when we went from standard def to high def and it was like, "Oh wow, this is great." Like when you move from DVD to Blu-ray, it's like, "Oh wow, this is great. Like look at this difference." And then you get to this point where it's like I really can't imagine that it could be that you could have any greater depth of field or it can have any greater scope. And then all of a sudden you see something in 4K and it's like, whoa, what in the world is going on? I feel like that's kind of another step that we've just taken. It's not that what has come before was bad, but all of a sudden we start to see things in greater clarity and like there is a greater scope and there is a greater depth of field and those dark moments seem even darker and those bright moments, although I don't think we had many bright moments in this episode, but like the colors start to pop a little bit more. I feel like that's kind of what we have gotten a small taste of with this first episode in the series. And just based on some of the things from at least the next episode, it looks like, yeah, that might be what we are getting a taste for. It's just like this greater scope, greater clarity, greater color, greater darkness. I don't know.
And they gave us some great visuals right at the beginning of the episode, where, who rides their bike on the top of a mountain, in the grass. I
When a
mean,
mountain looks like that, heck yes.
I mean, you could definitely tell this was like, okay, we want to open this episode with, introducing Ryan and his, troubles with riding a bike. But we have to introduce this episode on like an epic grand scale, so we can't just have him on a street, We gotta like bring him onto the top of a mountain. He's driving across grass, which makes no sense at all. Then nobody, especially if you're having problems like controlling a bike, you would think go to the flattest surface you can possibly find,
I mean, they
And he,
honestly
what if he
took a
lost
20
control of
minute
that
train
and like
ride.
went and rode off the mountain, Like makes no sense. But visually, it was stunning. There, he throws the bike off the cliff. They're sitting on the edge of the mountain, kind of talking to each other after that. The visual was great.
Solid visual, but you're absolutely right. Like they took a 20-minute train ride to go ride a bike that they honestly probably could have just like rode their bike in the street outside of their house. But yeah, it was a solid visual. It was a great introduction to the episode.
And some surprising things to me, at least, and I hadn't picked up on this, and I didn't see anybody talking about it, but I did not realize that there's actually an indirect relation between Graham and Ryan, in that Graham's wife is Ryan's grandmother.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that listed anywhere leading up to it. And even in the panel that we saw from Comic-Con, that was never mentioned. They kept that relationship secret. And here I was saying that it was just like a professor and a student, but no, it's granddad.
Yeah. Graham the granddad. And
You mean Graham.
yes. And we had Grace, who was introduced as well. So that's, Ryan's gran, as he referred to her, but his grandma, which played a major role this entire episode. But we hadn't really, we'd been introduced to the three companions, and then you have this fourth person who's part of this episode that is related to book two of the three companions. So you're like, okay, right away, at least for me, I was like, what's going to happen to her? Right?
Like, I mean, it is interesting. Like you mentioned, we know the three companions. We saw the three companions in pictures. And then we have this extra character. And I know that she appeared in some of the stills that we had leading up to the episode. And you did catch the whole like hand on Graham's chest or the placement of the hand that made it look like, okay, there's a little bit more of a relationship there. But yeah, I was it going to be another Jackie experience where she's totally fine with everybody traveling, or does the doctor steal them away or what have you? But yeah, I kind of didn't see it going where it ended up, but I guess that was inevitable in me just wanting to be ignorant to that fact.
Yeah, and we can talk about that later on as we get to that part of the episode, how much it surprised you or didn't surprise you. But I thought the characterizations of these different companions that we were introduced to, I was actually a little surprised by everyone but Yaz. She kind of was spot on what I expected from her, but the other two I was surprised by, you know, kind of their characters.
Yeah, I think it was okay, I'm going to go back to the Comic-Con panel again. Like, just based on how Tosin approached the Comic-Con panel, like, you got this certain sense of who his character was, and Yaz had that enthusiasm. Mandeep had that enthusiasm, and it was like, okay, I thought we got a pretty good characterization of who they were, and Whitaker seemed like she was her character, and then Graham was supposed to be like this kooky, goofy type person. And Whitaker and Mandeep were like spot on, I feel like, based on what we saw in panels and other stuff too. And yeah, Tosin and well, Ryan and Graham were kind of, yeah, they were vastly different. How would you, maybe two words each, three words each, how would you describe each of the companions as we know them right now?
I would say Graham, and I'm definitely not going to be able to do it in two or three words, so don't put that on me. But
that's the game, Aaron. That's the game. You have to do it. Three words.
I would say Graham was a lot more timid than I expected.
Okay. Timid.
And Tosin or Ryan was a lot more likable than I expected him to be.
Oh, snap. Okay.
Like, relatable, likable. And the other two, you know, I think Yaz was driven and strong. And then the doctor was just awesome. Like, she just was everything I thought she was going to be. Like, based on the trailers and the teasers and hearing her at the panel, she just fit exactly what I expected from the doctor. So I loved the way that Jodie Whittaker portrayed the doctor. I couldn't have been more happy with that. But I, like I said, the big surprises for me was Tosin Cole, you know, the way he kind of presented himself at the panel and stuff. I was like, I still know if I'm going to like this guy. And I didn't know if I'd like his character. And I really did end up liking his character a lot. So that was a surprise. And then Graham, I just expected him to be different. I expected him to be maybe, you know, kind of a rough, you know, kind of older guy that's seen a lot and kind of really strong and confident. And he was really not. He wasn't at all. It was more Grace, his wife, who was kind of the strong one. And he kind of relied on her for his strength.
Yeah. I think what they did with the companions, like, they made them all, well, like the three main companions, Graham, Ryan, and Yaz, they made them all very vulnerable in their own way. And like that vulnerability in a way makes them very, very relatable. Like that's like you have Yaz where it's, she wants more. Like she's just driven. She wants more out of what she's doing. She wants to be trusted with more. She wants more opportunity. And you have Graham, who's kind of like this scared, fearful, hesitant, always second guessing. And like the doctor at one point even says, promise me you won't be scared. Like that is what he's known for. And then Ryan is like that, like he self-doubt. He blames himself for different things. That he underestimates himself. He limits himself. And yet the doctor points out multiple times throughout the episode, like, that's a good question. He's the only one that believes from the very get-go that aliens are involved. Like, he has good ideas, good thoughts, but yet he limits himself and he blames himself for all sorts of different things. So I'm all about these companions. I think they're very dynamic, and the relationship that they have to each other is really dynamic. We haven't really seen how that relates back to the doctor all that well, but I can see there's a lot of good stuff in store just in the relationships and the characterization of the characters moving forward.
And the one thing that I noticed about these characters or this episode in general, and it's probably a little too early to make this call about the entire season, but I feel like just based on this first episode, it feels very much more grounded. Like you had kind of pointed out that these characters are very relatable. And I've always loved the side of Doctor Who that's a little bit more, you know, whimsical and fun, and I would never have traded that in. But these companions, they're not your typical Doctor Who companions. You know, there's not a Rory type, you know, kind of that, you know, that character that doesn't really know what he's doing, but he's kind of comic relief and he's almost just adorably dumb.
Yeah.
And, you know, Amy was kind of over the top in her personality, and all these characters, like even like, you know, some of the more recent companions that we've had, even Nardole was kind of a ridiculous companion. You know, these are just people I feel like I could meet that I might work with, or, you know, I could meet on the street. You know, they're not these big characters. They're just normal people that are traveling with a doctor who seems very competent. And, you know, she's got some quirkiness about her, but it's not over the top quirkiness like we got with like Smith or even Eccleston sometimes, or definitely Capaldi. She is much more of kind of a real character, but still has that doctor charm. So I think that might be the tone that we're going to get from Chibnall, is he's taken this kind of fantastical story about a time traveler and he's grounded it.
Yeah. No, and I think you're spot on when it comes to like previous companions. There's always these elements of them that are like caricatures of real people. Like there's certain traits or there's certain elements of them that are just kind of blown out of proportion, and that becomes the element that is like the focus of their character moving forward, which none of the three companions have those elements about them. They are, like you said, just kind of, you could run into them at any point in time. They're the person that you went to grade school with, that you just happen to run into in high school or college or what have you. They are very grounded. And then, yeah, that's one thing that I'm still trying to wrap my head around when it comes to the doctor, is that it's not that the doctor was so much different from what we've seen before. And it's not that she was lacking intensity or anything along those lines, but it felt, I guess maybe that's the best way to put it, like she felt very grounded, and like she still had some quirkiness, but even the quirks were like grounded. And there was something about that just like, it drew me in. I really enjoyed it. It didn't have such high highs and such low lows, but it still had that like enigmatic personality that just grabs you, and you want to see, okay, where is she going to go next?
And I hope what's going to happen with this new Doctor Who is, it may appeal to a whole new audience, but still be similar enough to what's come before to still keep the existing audience. You know, I think, because I have some friends that I've tried to get into Doctor Who before that just don't get it. They can't, it's a little over the top for them. It's a little cheesy for them. And I feel like this, you know, just based on the first episode, we don't know, you know, what the rest of the season is going to look like. But if they keep this tone, I really feel like this is an opportunity for a lot of people to jump on, people who have tried Doctor Who in the past that just didn't work out, just didn't fit their, you know, interests. I think this is a little bit more palatable for people that aren't ready for the kind of bizarreness that is Doctor Who sometimes.
Yeah, and that's what Chibnall has said from the very beginning, that like this is a great place for people to jump on board. And whether they just ride the train moving forward or they go back and visit what has come before, this was supposed to be that great reintroduction or first introduction to the Doctor. And It's a great episode to get that introduction.
Yep. So let's talk a little bit about the characters more than we already have. But specifically Ryan, he's got dyspraxia, which was something that we did not know going in, which was kind of an interesting thing to give a companion's a kind of a disability like that right off the bat. And I think it's going to be an interesting opportunity for, you know, the inclusion of someone with a disability, but also interesting storytelling elements that could be around, you know, kind of his lack of ability to have, you know, great coordination could definitely come into play in a lot of their adventures.
Yeah, it was surprising. Again, it's not what we expected to see from this character. And yet from the very get-go with the situation with the bike, not being able to ride the bike, and then different situations throughout the episode, it comes to the surface again. Some points just in reality, when he's at the end and he's trying to climb up a crane and he drops a flashlight, or when Yaz says, "Hey, you don't have to do this." And he says, "Yes, I do. I'm going to do it." Or then there's a situation where something doesn't go right and Graham just flat out says, "Are you going to blame this on that as well?" And it was like, whoa, are we really going there already? But it is an interesting element to introduce to a character, and totally not something that I expected, just from everything that's led up to it and kind of right, whether right or wrong, the assumption I had about who this character was going to be.
Yeah. And so Yaz is a police officer in training, I guess, kind of traffic cop. I don't know. I'm not sure like how like the police force in England relates to like the American
probation
police force.
Year two officer, whatever.
I didn't know
was.
What that meant. Yeah. When she said that, I was like, okay. But she seems like she's kind of just like a traffic cop, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, she was looking at parking violations and such,
but then also going to look at alien encounters as well. So.
She asked for more.
I think I got from. I remember when we watched the leaked clip and they're on the train and you see Yaz come up and start to question the doctor and Ryan's with her. I thought they were partners. I thought they were both police officers.
Absolutely.
So that was a big surprise for me that he actually wasn't with her already. He wasn't, you know, they weren't there together as partners. He was just some guy, you know, a warehouse worker who she happened to have, you know, run into. And now she did used to go to school with him, which was
Redlands Primary.
Yeah. So there was a lot of connection right off the bat. I kind of expected these three companions to be very much individuals who kind of happenstance came together. But really, he used to go to school with Yaz. Graham is his step-granddad, essentially. So there already was a connection between these three characters even before they met the doctor.
Yeah. Talk to me about the relationship between Ryan and Graham. How does that relationship play out in your mind? How does that relationship work for you, or does it not work for you?
It seems like it's going to be an interesting dynamic, but it doesn't seem like sometimes you get those things where there's almost a hostility, you know, between, you know, he doesn't see him as really his grandfather. They showed that right off the bat when she's like, you know, oh, you know, go to your granddad. And he's like, you mean Graham? So he doesn't necessarily accept him as family, but there's not like a major hostility. They can get along. They don't fight. There isn't like some kind of, you know, aggression between the two characters. So I think moving forward, especially now with what did happen to Grace, that even probably more so will bond the characters. So I don't think it's going to be any kind of a strife between them.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that just looking forward, I'm interested to see how it plays out. Like, is there going to be an episode where we have that somewhat cliche, somewhat cheesy, make eye contact and he says, "Sure thing, granddad." And like, we have this emotional moment and connection, or is that after this episode, does that not matter anymore? I'm just interested to see how Chibnall handles that situation.
Yeah. I feel like they won't go that direction with it. I think he'll still call him Graham. You know, I don't think that he'll suddenly be like, you know, starting to call him granddad, you know, just because of what happened.
Grandfather,
yeah. So, but yeah, I think that there's more to come with the family, because we know that his dad is still around. Yep. Ryan's dad is around, but he wasn't there for the funeral. So what's the story behind that? His dad is distant. Maybe he was never part of his life. We don't really know the whole story. We don't know about his mom. So I think there's going to be future episodes where we find out more about Ryan's family. This first episode definitely seemed to focus way more on Ryan than it did on Yaz. So Yaz's story must be coming up later.
It makes me I noticed that as well, and I didn't know if it was kind of what you just alluded to. Are they going to take different episodes to draw in on the different companions, or is it like he is the main companion and the other two are just going to be there as a foil in situations or to help along the plot? Like, is he really the focus, his relationship with the doctor moving forward?
I think this episode specifically, they wanted to showcase Ryan and Graham because it was kind of around what happens to Grace and all of that. And I think there just wasn't enough time to really get a lot of backstory for Yasmin. But they did make sure that you did get a couple scenes with her, the part where she's got the altercation between the two women and the parking situation where the lady hits the hammer through the window.
And dang, did she handle that one well?
And so you got to see her character there. You got to see her personality, her take charge personality. Also got to see that she wasn't necessarily happy with where she was, and she wanted more of a challenge in life. You got to see her interact with, her supervisor at the police station. So they did have some scenes that were specifically about her, but I think because of the family dynamic with the other two, that they wanted to focus more on them first. So I don't think Yasmin's going to be like a lesser companion or anything like that. I think she'll have her moment where you're going to get some more backstory on her as well, because she's got to have family too. And if she's going to be traveling around, even though it may be unwillingly based on what happened at the end of this episode, we're going to have to find out, where her family is too.
I hear you.
So, yeah, so we focused a lot on the characters, but not so much on the story and kind of. Even the doctor, we haven't really talked much about. The doctor does fall to Earth, from the TARDIS. We got to see the end of the Christmas special where she's falling out of the TARDIS, and we were kind of all wondering what's going to happen. How is she going to not fall and die? I guess if you just regenerated as a doctor, you can fall thousands of feet and slam through a train roof into the ground and still survive.
I mean, why not? You can lose a hand, you can fall from the air. It doesn't really matter.
Not only survived, she just popped right back up. It wasn't
She
it was
did.
but I can totally give them a pass on that. There's a couple, precedences for this. I remember Matt Smith in an episode fell to Earth, but he was in a spacesuit. Do you remember that, where he kind of fell and slammed into the ground, but he was wearing a spacesuit? I believe it was the one with the wardrobe, that Christmas special.
Oh, yep.
So you kind of have that already has happened. But the reason why I'm really willing to give it a pass here is because she did just regenerate. So she's still got all that regeneration energy that I feel like she could have survived just about anything, in that
That's
moment. So
true,
I was
true.
completely fine with the fact that she survived the fall.
Yeah, I mean it resulted in a very fun entrance. I mean, up to this point, Pod has shown up, the strange pod in the woods. First, Ryan tries to ride his bike, throws the bike off the cliff. The bike gets stuck in a tree. He has to go retrieve it. Graham and Grace jump on a train. He goes down there, sees a really strange pod. Well, first, he plays with some shapes in the air, which that was a cool visual. I'm just going to say, like, that was a really cool visual to have there with the shapes flying around and all stuff like that. Pod shows up. Yasmin shows up. Then they go on the train. Well, train. What happens? Electricity, train driver dies. Creature shows up on train, starts chasing Graham and Grace, and the doctor falls through the roof. And that was a fantastic entrance. That's it. Like you mentioned, like she survives and then she just pops right up right in the moment where it's like, okay, this is kind of intense. And I'm not gonna lie, that like tentacle wire creature thing that was coming through, legitimately creepy. Like they did a really good job of that dark tentacly stuff going down the top of the train.
Yes, and they, we were talking about kind of how the tone may be a little more grounded. this is one area that they stayed very Doctor Who, and that is in the aliens, because that was the cheese. You know, the we still got the cheesy aliens. You know, a coiled ball of electricity flying around, shocking people, is not something you'd see in any other television show other than Doctor Who.
But in this moment, as it's like coming through the doors, it didn't really look all that cheesy just yet. Like, as you see the different tentacles like coming out through the door, it reminds me of some show, but I can't quite put my finger on it. But it looked solid. Yeah, and then it turns into a solid ball that's kind of like floating around and shocking and stuff. And then it didn't look bad.
Yeah, it didn't look bad. It was still very intimidating and scary, but it very much a Doctor Who design. It fit the motif of Doctor Who very well. And I love how when she does come crashing through the roof, and then she just takes care of the situation. Like, everybody else is scared, everybody else is backing up and trying to get away from this thing, and she just goes up and just, you know,
she first tries to talk to it.
Yeah.
Who are you?
And I thought that was a cool introduction to her version of the Doctor, because I know as we've gotten these regenerations in the past, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, they're delirious or sick. You know, Capaldi's talking to a dinosaur and doesn't really know who anybody around him is, and he ends up having to sleep and lay in bed forever. Tennant, kind of the same thing. Now, Smith did kind of just jump right into the action. So this kind of reminded me more of Smith's first episode, where she did jump right into the action. Now, she did have the moment where she had to sleep on the couch for a little bit, but they didn't really dwell on that. It was kind of like, you know, she needed to sleep and some regeneration energy kind of went away from her, and then she woke up and, you know, was on her way. I was a little confused about the whole phone thing and like the reboot of his phone and why it shocked her and threw her into the wall.
Yeah.
And kind of what that was supposed to signify. Like, did that help her, like, her reboot faster in her regenerations? Or was that just, I don't know. I was kind of confused.
I don't know if the phone did anything or if it was just like, because multiple times she mentions that even after she woke up from the nap, she says that the nap did her a world of good, but like, she still talks about how she's still fizzing inside, that she's not done yet. And so I think that might've just been like one of those regeneration energy, like shocks or something, that threw her back up against the wall. I don't think it had anything to do with the phone though, but
okay. I didn't think so. The first time I saw it, I thought it was the phone that shocked her. The second time I watched it, I was like, oh, no, that was just her regeneration, like, you know, kind of feedback, like shot her back into the wall and then she woke up. And then the third time I watched it, I was like, no, it definitely looks like the phone shocks her. So, like, I think you actually see a visible, like, spark come from the phone. So I was, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a big deal, but it was something that I was a little confused about, you know, what it was supposed to mean.
That's another small element of this entire episode. That Ryan Sinclair is addicted to his phone. Like, that is his answer to everything. He's the one who looks up on social media. Even when she's shopping for clothes, he's on his phone. Like, his phone is his life.
And it's very relevant of our time. You know, he's supposed to be 19, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of makes sense that, you know, somebody his age would definitely be, you know, into social media and posting YouTube videos. You know, now this day, like, if my grandma died, I'd probably, you know, talk to my friends about it. I wouldn't post a YouTube video. But if you're 19, that's what people do now, you know? You know, he's posting to his YouTube channel his memories of his grandma. So, you know, you got YouTube represented. You had Twitter mentioned. I believe Grace is using WhatsApp on her phone. So, yeah, there's a lot of kind of modern technology is modern, you know, the way people actually do communicate nowadays. It's a fair representation.
Yeah. So anyways, phone gets rebooted. That's where we were at. Shocks her.
When they have the DNA bombs that she discovers in their collarbones, I guess,
yeah. Which
that, you know, tentacle monster, you know, put it in each of them. As a way to get rid of witnesses, I think is what she explained.
Yep,
but it was more really, it really wasn't the reason though, right? Wasn't it some more like about the tracking of them?
I thought it was, I didn't think it was tracking. I thought it was still just to get rid of witnesses because he cheated. And so they weren't supposed to know that the gather coil was there.
Okay. Because later in the episode, she says something to Tim Shaw about, you know, did you tag what's the guy's name?
Carl.
Carl. And he was like, oh, he didn't need to be tagged because we were already tracking him. So then that's why I was wondering if it also had the purpose of tracking. But
See, like
neither here nor there.
that part stuck out to me because like she's already gone through the process of removing the DNA bombs, right? And she's already done all the stuff with the tracking coil. And so at that point when she asks, "Did you put one in your in Carl too?" That was the like last linchpin of her plan. Because if he would have put a DNA bomb in Carl, she would have been screwed. Like then he could have blown up the DNA bombs and she would have lost Carl. So as
Right.
soon as he said no, she's like, okay, I thought so much, and then she could go through with her plan. I don't know, that might have been totally obvious, but it stuck out to me the second rewatch and it was like, oh, that makes so much more sense now.
Yeah, and we're definitely jumping around now, which is
Yeah, sorry.
as per usual with our conversations about Doctor Who. We try to stay in order of the events, and then we just start jumping around, which I mean, we kind of have to. Otherwise, we'd be here all night talking about this episode because there's so much to talk about. But kind of back on the rooftop where she confronts him, and she does say to Tim Shaw, basically, like, you're not going to take a human from Earth tonight. At some point, she says that to him. I don't remember if that's on the crane or if that's on the rooftop. I think it was on the rooftop. And she's like, you're not going to take a human from Earth tonight. And I was thinking, okay, maybe he's not going to physically take a human from the Earth tonight, but he's definitely going to take a bunch of human lives.
That's he did. So
He killed a lot of people.
that was the question I wanted to ask you. What is the death toll count of this episode?
I was trying to count as I was watching it this last time, and I stopped. I lost track, but I mean, it's not too crazy. I'm sure we've gotten bigger death tolls in previous episodes of Doctor Who, but actual personal, because past in Doctor Who, you kind of have like bigger events that happen, and you're like, okay, a bunch of people probably died. But in this episode, it's very personal. Everyone that died, you had a moment with, you know, the lady in the train that died at the beginning. You had the brother that's in the kind of the like, mechanic shop
Raul.
that gets his face shocked or frozen or whatever she said, like freezer burned, and then he gets his tooth ripped out. Very violent way for these people to die. Then you have the drunk guy with the salad throwing the salad at him. So
Eat my
we're up.
salad, Halloween. My
That was kind
salad.
of a random, I will say that. That's one criticism. That scene was so random. It just seemed kind of out of place. Almost like they should have cut it. Like they filmed it and maybe that should have gotten cut.
I know it was one of I had a hard time putting it like why like was it a favor to someone? Is that guy who is plays the drunk guy
I thought the
like
same thing.
a
I was like,
friend?
that must be somebody. That's a friend of somebody. Yeah. He was
But
in
just the whole
Broadchurch, I'm sure. Look up his IMDb. I guarantee he was in Broadchurch.
just the
But
whole eat my salad Halloween.
Halloween, yeah.
Classic.
So
I gotta
salad
say though,
guy.
like he kills him and then he takes a tooth, and I swear, like if you look above Tim Shaw's shoulder, there's a blood mist that goes up. I've
Ooh.
watched that scene a couple times and I thought, okay, no, it's a light, but I don't think it's a light. I think it's a mist of blood. Anyways, yeah, so there's a drunk guy who wants Halloween to eat his salad.
Yeah, and then there's the nice old man who's talking to his granddaughter on the phone.
Oh, Dennis
Which I was like,
kills me.
why?
Kills me.
Why'd you have to kill the nice old man who just literally got off the phone with his granddaughter saying, like, you know, oh, you need to obey your mom, but I really appreciate you calling me. I must be the luckiest, you know, granddad in the world. And then like 5 seconds later, he gets brutally murdered. I wasn't
That
cool with
was
that one. The other ones I was
no.
okay with. Everybody else, you know, that died, it was kind of like, okay, I can deal with that. But that guy, I was like, no, that he has gone too far. So that put us at four, I think, right? Does that I think that's about right. Four deaths, four very
Okay.
personal deaths.
So here's my count. I have six,
Oh.
but I counted Raul's sister. She is dead off scene, off screen. The sister that went missing. I'm counting her dead. Does that count?
No.
Okay. So five.
It didn't happen in the episode.
You missed Nan.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Grace.
There you
And
go.
do we count Tim Shaw as dead?
No, because he teleported.
Okay, so five. Okay. That's our death toll of this episode
Death
is
toll
five.
five. We should do a track. We should track the death toll per episode and see if it's, you know, kind of a continuing theme that there's a number of people who die in very personal ways.
Oh, that's one of the few things, or yeah, one of the handful of things I'll be tracking this season.
Nice that we're on a spreadsheet.
I have my tracking that I'm curious about. Yeah, I'm gonna start a spreadsheet.
How many times the doctor says sorry?
That
Is that
is
you want to track
another
that?
thing. I'm gonna go back through all of Capaldi, count how many times he says sorry to the best of my ability, and I'm going to count all of Whitaker's sorries moving
Well,
forward.
it stuck out to me the number of times that she said sorry in this episode. And I was like, is this unique to this doctor? I was trying to think back if I could remember, you know, Capaldi or Tennant or Smith, if they apologized as much as she did. And then you actually came across a pretty interesting fact, at least with Capaldi's first episode, right?
Yeah, so again, this is something that stuck out to me. It stuck out to my wife. We kind of talked about it a little bit. I messaged you about it, and you're like, no, I spotted the same thing. So I went back through and I read through the transcript for Capaldi's very first episode, Deep Breath, where he's talking to the dinosaur. He says sorry in that episode 12 times. Counting the number of times the doctor says sorry in this episode, she says it six times. So it's half as much. The one thing that I want to go back and look at with Capaldi's first episode is he's also a very sarcastic doctor. So I don't know how many times he says sorry and it's actually legitimate. I know that there's one time in particular where he says sorry and then he immediately says, no, I'm not. So it's like, I don't know if I count that as a legitimate sorry, but that is something that I want to go back and I want to just take a high level view of, okay, how many times are we getting apologies from the doctor?
I would love to look at the context, especially with Capaldi, because I do remember that first episode of Capaldi. He was not too friendly with the humans that
No,
he
not
met.
at
In
all.
fact, I believe he called humans monkeys at one point. So
Yeah.
I think maybe a lot of his apologies were to the actual dinosaur
In fact, I think
and
there's like six right
sarcastically.
off the bat to the dinosaur.
So whereas in this, it was very much Jodie Whittaker's doctor was apologizing to the people around her, you know, either because she wasn't able to figure something out or something that happened to them,
Yeah.
which she seems much more in tune with the humanity of, you know, than we've gotten, especially with Capaldi. Capaldi was almost like the first season, he was just annoyed that he had to save these people a lot of times,
Yep.
whereas she is very much there to save people.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a different take on the doctor, which would be expected. You know, Capaldi was a very, you know, he went one direction pretty hard when it comes to his version of the doctor.
Yeah, I mean, the
So
theme for almost his entire first or second season was, Am I a good man? Like, he was even calling into question whether or not he was the doctor.
And she comes in and she's like, a couple times she said, and I don't have the lines exactly, but basically like, I'm here to help you. You know,
Yeah.
when I see problems, I fix them. You know, that I really love that dynamic about her is she right off the bat is here to help people and to save people and not necessarily, you know, she's not there to kind of, I don't know. Capaldi was in a weird spot as the doctor, you know, and he was angry a lot and he had a lot, kind of a bit of a chip on his shoulder. And we've gotten that with all the versions of the doctor, you know, from Eccleston on. So to see this version of a doctor who's a lot more positive and a lot more, you know, sincere, I actually, it's kind of a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, and the line, and it's probably the one that you're referring to, but like she's going through the regeneration explanation, which honestly was an awesome explanation of the regeneration experience as far as like right when the moment you feel like you are going to die, all of a sudden you're born and it's terrifying. But she follows that up by saying, when people need help, I never refuse. And that is like, that feels like this doctor. Even amidst all the uncertainty that the doctor's going through in this episode, that is what the doctor continually comes back to is when people need help, I never refuse. The doctor's going to be there. The doctor's going to work through the situations, think through things, chase things down, play catch up on the problems, but the doctor's there to help.
Yes. And She had a lot of good lines. She had a lot of good, like, I love the way she explained regeneration. We've never really gotten that from a previous
Yeah.
doctor. I love some of her lines, but just like one line that was really good. But I don't know if this is a difference between Chibnall's writing and Moffat's writing, but Moffat was really good at kind of giving the doctor these speeches.
Yep.
And we didn't really get a speech from her. We didn't get that moment where she was like, we did get the I'm the doctor moment, but we didn't get much more beyond that. It was kind of like, I'm the doctor, I forget the exact line, but it was basically like, I'm the doctor, and you better get off the planet if you know it's good for yourself, kind of thing.
Yeah, it was like you better leave while you have the choice.
Well, you have the choice. And she said
That
something before that, something about like fixing things that are broken, or, I mean, I wish I had the lines up. Do you have the dialogue
I don't
from
have
that
the
scene?
dialogue. It was running around, ensuring fair play throughout the galaxy.
Yes, yeah,
Is
fair
that the
play
line that
throughout
you're
the
thinking of?
galaxy. Yes. And you better leave while you still have the choice. So it was a quick, like, couple lines, but it definitely wasn't that grandstanding speech that we're used to. Kind of the Matt Smith on top of the hospital, walking through pictures of the doctor kind of moment where you get
Yeah.
chills and he gets the music and he gets his own theme at that point. And I will say I missed it a little bit. I did miss kind of that big moment.
It is one of those things where throughout the episode, she's trying to remember who she is. She's trying to bring back to remembrance of like, okay, and who am I? And it's so annoying to her, and it's right on the tip of her tongue, and she can't remember her identity. And so it feels like the entire episode is leading up to, like you mentioned, that 11th hour Matt Smith on the roof of the hospital. Like, that is what we're going to get. And then the moment comes, Stenza Tim Shaw asks, "Who are you?" Which the way that he says it is just awesome. It literally is like, "Who are you? Like, just leave me alone." And she's like, "I'm glad you asked." And it's like, "Ooh, here it comes." And then it's like 5 sentences, maybe 3 sentences. And it's like, "Oh, okay. Short and sweet. It makes sense." But it just felt like there was such a buildup, and maybe there wasn't a buildup. Maybe it was just like an expectation and a buildup in my mind, and it just never was going to happen. But I think you're right. Like, the doctor did have a lot of good lines, but they were like 5-word lines as opposed to five sentence or one paragraph lines.
Right. We did get, so kind of trying to fill in some of the blanks here that we haven't talked about yet. In trying to avoid just being here for 2 hours straight, because we probably could. I think we're both really excited about this episode.
Yeah, probably.
But we didn't talk yet about the creation of her Sonic, which
Okay.
we had seen images of the Sonic. We had both kind of voiced our opinions about what it looked like. We weren't necessarily thrilled with the design. Now we got to see, because we had, this is where one of the areas that we were definitely wrong, is we had kind of speculated that it was something that she finds and there's some kind of archaeological dig. And then none of that was in this episode. You know,
Nope, not at all.
when she pulled that plastic curtain back, it wasn't a plastic curtain covering up an archaeological dig. It was a plastic curtain in a, car repair shop, I
Yeah,
guess.
exactly. Like all the pictures that we were basing our archaeological dig off of, it was this episode. We just were totally wrong about where they were. Everything is there. It's just not exactly what we thought it was.
Yeah, so she doesn't discover some ancient Sonic, which I kind of expected. I thought it was going to be some maybe ancient Sonic. It's a little bit more gritty, and it hadn't been refined yet. And nope, this is literally something she made out of spare parts and a spoon
A couple
and
spoons.
a piece of Tim Shaw's, time travel pod, or I guess not really time travel, but his pod. What did you think about the fact that the doctor can just make a Sonic?
Yeah, so not gonna lie, I did struggle with that a bit until as I was looking around and reading about stuff, people were like, "Well, if Amy Pond can make a sonic probe, then the doctor can make a sonic." And it's like, okay, so there is a little bit of precedence for this. And the more I thought about it, the more it's like, I'm cool with it. There's a lot of fun stuff about it. It's still ugly. It is one ugly Sonic.
But it makes more sense that it's ugly.
Yeah, no, it totally makes more sense.
She fashioned it out of just parts and like, so that I'm actually more cool with the design now that I know where it came from. But you know, like you said, Amy Pond made her own Sonic. Yeah, she was there for years and years, decades, right? Like,
yeah.
And she was in a facility that probably had a lot of material she could use. She wasn't there for like 10 minutes in a, you know, a mechanic shop. Like, that's the only, like, I was like watching this and I'm like, wow, weird to believe that someone with the right skills can make a Sonic in like 10 minutes and using just parts laying around. And now she did have some alien tech there, so that kind of helped. But at the same time, like, this, I don't know. It was a little weird to me, but
see,
they did it in a very fun way in the way they presented it.
If they wouldn't have smushed it between like Ryan and Yaz finding the file on the computer, her jumping in and making the Sonic, and then Ryan running into the room and saying, "Hey, we found something," like, then that time frame could have seemed a lot longer. But the video that they watched was like 30 seconds long, and they were just in the other room over. So it really didn't take all that long to make the Sonic.
Yeah, it felt like I said, 10 minutes or less.
Yeah.
It was fun. I like the spoon gag. I like that she holds up a spoon because, you know, we've gotten the moments with the Doctor and a spoon in previous incarnations of the Doctor. So that was fun. You know, it was what it was. Like, they needed to get her a Sonic. That's how they wrote it into the story. And, you know, we'll move on. But that was one moment where I was just like, I don't know. Because usually in the past, it's like getting the Sonic was always such a big deal. And the TARDIS had to make it. And
right
now it's just kind of like, oh, I guess maybe this is a trait of this specific Doctor. Because we've never really seen other Doctors fashion things in this way. And she did it like 3 or 4 times in this episode where she just kind of took parts and made stuff.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's just a trait of this specific Doctor, maybe.
She's super resourceful.
She's like MacGyver Doctor. With her Swiss nice. Army Sonic. I hope they don't keep calling it that.
Oh, I've read a couple articles where it says Sonic screwdriver and it's struck through and they write Swiss Army. And so I'm of the same opinion. I hope that's not what kind of takes hold. She did follow it up though with like only what was it? Only idiots carry knives.
Mm-hmm. Idiots carry knives, which all the people that are camping enthusiasts out there probably were like, "What?"
She's all the Boy Scouts out there.
Yeah,
always
exactly.
Be prepared.
We have to carry a knife. Yeah, so that was a little odd, but it did have some fun elements in her making the Sonic. And she does call it a Sonic screwdriver when they ask her what it is. She does say Sonic screwdriver. So I believe that is what they will refer to it as. I think the Sonic Swiss Army knife was just a bit of a gag. I don't think that's going to be they're not changing the name of it, I don't believe.
And Aaron, at least they're not sunglasses.
Yep, it's not sunglasses.
It's although not sunglasses look cooler.
Than this thing. I do like how she like pulls it out like she's all proud and then she hits the button and it sparks really big.
Yes.
And she's like, it'll be fine.
it should be good.
Jodie Whittaker has great comedic timing.
She does.
And it's kind of like a dry humor too. You know, some of her lines are just really like quick and spot on. So I'm really liking kind of that more intelligent humor.
Yeah,
not so much physical humor that we got with like Smith.
Yeah, no, it definitely like the desire, at least for me, is always to draw comparisons, and I really don't think there's a comparison. Like there is, I can't even say that there's elements, but you're absolutely right. Like it's a dry humor, and it's the type of humor that I love. Personally, like where someone can deliver something and they aren't just cracking themselves up the entire time, but it is legitimately funny and they treat it like it's no big deal and they move on. And that's kind of what we get. There's so many There's so many just lines that are delivered well, and they're funny. She calls Tim Shaw a big blue cheat, like, and doesn't
or the fact
doesn't
that she
even
just called him Tim Shaw the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. And like, there's no corresponding like facial expressions as far as like, I know this is a joke. She just goes with it, and it's awesome. Like, it is solid. I enjoy it.
So we have like at least five other things we need to talk about.
Oh, dang.
We'll try
Sorry.
not to take too much more time, but so we did talk about Tim Shaw and, you know, the Stenza Warrior. So this is a new bad guy. You know, like they said, they're not going to use any classic villains. This is a new villain, new alien species that we get introduced to Doctor Who here. The Stenza Warrior, when they do this hunt and they take a tooth, they actually stick that tooth in their face.
That's disgusting.
Which is really disgusting, looks intimidating. He was a pretty intimidating villain, I thought. What did you think about the Stenza Warrior being added to kind of the rogues gallery of Doctor Who?
It's essentially the Predator, right? Like, comes to Earth on a hunt, literally unstoppable, has a freaky mask. Like, it's to me, it was the Predator, and he was legitimately disgusting looking, and it kind of fit Doctor Who. It's like an ice warrior, just kind of different.
The one thing that I felt like the armor looked a little like styrofoamy.
Seriously?
But I felt that, I've always felt that about Doctor Who. Whenever they try to do armored characters, it always comes across almost like cosplay. You know, that's the one, like, I feel like they've never done well with armor, and this
didn't. That's your knock out of everything that you could call out about this character. He has teeth sticking out of his flippin' face. Like, you go for his armor looks like styrofoam.
Yeah, it looked like if I punched his armor, it would just break. Or it was made out of rubber or something. I don't know. It just didn't. It's still like they still haven't perfected armored characters.
I love it. I love it.
But overall, I actually liked the villain. I thought it very much felt like a Doctor Who villain, and it kind of fit that style where it's a little bit over the top, a little bit cheesy, but still intimidating. That's kind of how Doctor Who does it. That's how Doctor Who does their aliens. That's how Doctor Who does their bad guys.
Yeah.
And it really did fit that style. So I liked it.
It
and
also,
I liked
like,
how he was exposed as being a bit of a fraud too. You know, as intimidating as he was cheating. You know, he brought this thing with him that he wasn't supposed to bring with him. You know, he used a teleport to escape. You know, I think, you know, he was exposed as a fraud, and the Doctor was able to do that.
And that's exactly right. Like, the villain wasn't just a scary looking monster, but there were like dimensions to it that I don't think we've gotten before. Like, there wasn't just a single motivation. Well, there was a single motivation, but then there were also layers to, well, he's doing it the wrong way, he's a fraud, he's cheating, he is doing it this way, and he has this intent of becoming the leader, and he's kind of a junior officer right now. Like, there was a lot more that I think that we got from this character than I think we've gotten from, like, was it Before the Flood, where it was that big, tall, creepy looking thing that then ended up being really nothing and had no motivation whatsoever and was kind of actually really confusing. But yeah, I feel like this villain was actually well written, all things considered.
What did you think about Carl? Good addition.
I am valued.
Nice comic relief.
I am special. People, somebody out there wants me. Like, all those lines that he was saying to himself as Tim Shaw was coming to go to get him, I thought were funny. I liked Carl. Carl is cool. Except for when Carl kicked Tim Shaw off the crane. That was a low blow.
I mean, come on. This Tim Shaw was about to kidnap Carl from Earth and put him in stasis so he could rot away and not die.
But seriously,
I'm pretty sure he was justified to kick the guy off the crane.
He was just getting, like, drug around by his neck, and then all of a sudden he has the guts to kick Tim Shaw off the crane. Like,
well, it was definitely a low blow, but man, you got to take what you got. Like, I don't like. I thought it was interesting that the doctor seemed upset that he did that. I'm like, this guy was just murdering people, and was still a threat, essentially. And, you know, I don't know. I thought Carl did the right thing. Kick him off that crane. The doctor's like, you had no right to do that. I'm like, I think he did.
I think he had
He was trying to murder
established
him.
his position.
Yeah.
He had a well-founded position in this argument. No, I think that's interesting that the doctor said that though. Like, you had no right to do that because the doctor had just handled it in the doctor's way of making the character make a decision, the villain make a decision, and based on the bad decision, the villain reaped consequences for that. That wouldn't have been done if the character would have made the right decision. But anyways, I thought that was
Yeah.
interesting.
Anyway, I kind of thought the doctor maybe killed the character, killed Tim Shaw basically by reversing the, or making it so when he set off the bombs, he actually was killing himself.
That's exactly what happened. But she
Yes,
gave him
because
the
he's,
choice.
but before, yeah, but so then when his head started dripping like blue liquid, I'm like, okay, she just liquefied the guy, he's dying. So why would she care if he got kicked off the crane at that point? She had already kind of done the deed, unless maybe he was just injured and could have survived. And he does, you know, use a little teleporter thing to disappear before we get to see him fall to his death. So who knows? He probably did survive, and maybe he'll come back later. But it was kind of a weird reaction from her to be upset that he was kicked off the crane.
I think that kind of establishes her character as being a strong believer in the idea of do no harm.
She just harmed him, though.
She didn't. He harmed himself. It was his own choice. She even says that. This was your choice. This was by your doing.
All right. We can look at it that way. Matt Smith used to use that same excuse, and he was killing people too.
She says, you had a choice. You did this to yourself.
This is your fault. Now your
This
brains are gonna melt.
your fault. This is a natural consequence.
What else we, so Grace's death surprised you or no?
Yeah, kind of. I wasn't expecting it. Well, I wasn't expecting it up to the point that the doctor said, don't come back. And they came back. And it's like, okay, bad things are going to happen.
Yeah, I was not surprised. I figured she was going to die when they first introduced her. It didn't make sense for her to be around anymore. I was still very sad when she died, and the whole funeral scene, and to see how it affected Graham was very emotional. Very well done if it was trying to kind of make people cry. I will say, when I was at New York Comic Con watching this in Madison Square Garden with thousands of people, there was a huge, huge reaction. Like people were shouting and sobbing and, you know, not happy with the fact that this
Really?
character died. Oh man, it was, as soon as she st like you as soon as she lost her grip, there was just an audible from thousands of people collectively, this audible like gasp.
Huh.
And then when she hit the ground, there was an audible no, like shouting, like no, you know, like that kind of reaction from this audience. And then just moaning and groaning and every kind of sound you would make, you know, when a friend died kind of thing all throughout. I was kind of surprised. Like, I don't ha
Huh.
you typically have audible reactions to things, but to hear everyone else around me have these kind of audible reactions to that character. 'Cause I mean, that character was a very strong character
Yeah,
and a very
absolutely.
likable character, and to have her kind of, you know, be established and then to be taken away. But I think that it's a, you know, it's part of Graham's character growth in that he is a bit of a weak character and kind of hides behind things and questions everything and is very timid. And so you almost needed her to kind of be stripped away so he could no longer rely on her for his strength. So it's part of the storytelling, but at the same time, really sad to lose a character that probably did have a lot of potential to be pretty cool.
Yeah. So here's the question. Is Grace really the woman who fell to Earth?
I mean, if we want to get technical, sure.
It's the bookends. Ryan starts
Yeah,
with her, Ryan ends with her. The episode is about her.
it's a very you know, clever title when you really kind of see the whole episode through to see, you know, that there are a couple different meanings behind it. So good on you, Chibnall. We like you already.
Look at you.
And then kind of the big thing, couple, well, the last two things here, new clothes. We already have seen them. We've seen these clothes a lot, so it wasn't like a surprise when we saw the reveal. I did like the fact that she's literally just getting her clothes from a thrift store. And I also like the fact that the companions kind of were, when she came out and Yaz was like, that's what you're going with? You know, I like that there was doubt there because it is a bit of an odd outfit, although cool. It's definitely odd.
Yeah. I also like empty pockets. She's not paying for it. So the companions bought her clothes for her.
Yes. And I think there was a fun fact. What is it here? I'll read it exactly as it was, as I found it. But it says, this marks the first time a recently regenerated doctor does not use the TARDIS wardrobe or resort to stealing to acquire a new outfit. Instead, the clothes are bought from a store. So this is the first time that a doctor actually purchased their clothes rather than stealing or using the TARDIS.
Huh.
Because Matt Smith just straight up stole clothes from doctors.
He did. He stole clothes from doctors. Did Capaldi didn't steal it from the guy in the alley, did he?
No. I think we never really know where he got his clothes. He kind of just has them.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you mentioned the TARDIS.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, TARDIS.
There was no TARDIS.
Kind of a big deal. There was no TARDIS.
That's kind of
the entire episode, which is also kind of a new thing. I think they said another fun fact. It is the first, what does it say here? Oh, it's the first episode, which is a regeneration, like post-regeneration episode, that the TARDIS does not appear ever in Doctor Who.
Huh. That is an interesting one.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, maybe that's a big, you know, part of the season. Maybe that's, you know, she's trying to find the TARDIS and that's kind of the thing. So maybe she doesn't have a TARDIS. I was kind of questioning that because of the fact that you know that there's going to be some time travel based on other previews that we've seen. So it's kind of like, well, how are they going to time travel without it? I still kind of question that. I'm going to just go out on a limb and guess that they actually find the TARDIS in the second episode. And that they're going to have it the rest of the season. But it is curious in what happens at the very end of this episode where she's trying to find where the TARDIS is located. She builds this teleport thing from scratch, once again, you know, establishing her skills, and accidentally teleports herself and the three companions into the middle of space. And they just leave us in a cliffhanger, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, and this episode, unlike other episodes, didn't end with a next time on Doctor Who.
It did not, although there is a clip out there.
There is.
I believe when I saw
it. If you want to look, you can find it.
When I saw it at Madison Square Garden, they did show kind of next time.
Oh, okay.
And I know that there's one out there like on YouTube and stuff, so you can find it and get some previews. Now, this is what I think. This is going to be my prediction of what happens here. Because they're in the middle of space. The easy solution would be TARDIS shows up, materializes around them, and everybody's fine. Yeah. I don't think they're going there. I think it's going to be another spaceship that shows up and picks them up to save them.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Because we do see images of this kind of large spaceship that looks reminiscent of Firefly on a planet that is in the next episode. So I think this other ship shows up, saves them, takes them to this planet, and then they're going to go searching for the TARDIS. So,
and that is the reason why I say we still don't get the TARDIS the next episode.
Because of the spaceship?
Because I think there's other ways that they get out of the situation outside of the TARDIS, and I think,
but how do they time travel without the TARDIS? That's what I'm wondering.
Dude, she just made a teleporter. Like,
yeah, that's one thing to say. Okay, let me pinpoint this location.
She made a Sonic.
I'm not
putting
but
anything past her at this point.
So you think she could just suddenly start to time travel?
I think she's gonna find something and do something, and it's all gonna work out. Captain Jack is gonna show up. She's gonna steal his wristband or something.
Let's hope not. I mean, the easy thing would have been, because she did take, you know, because she had the teleporter thing from Tim Shaw in her possession at one point. Like, maybe if she, you know, fashioned, but even that was just a teleporter. It's not a it wasn't a time travel device like Captain Jack's thing. So
it's all going to be frequency based. See, she's tracking the frequency and she's tracked it through space. So when the TARDIS goes through time, she'll track the frequency through time.
I guess anything's possible, but I think that would be annoying if she just starts jumping through space and time without a TARDIS, because that's the whole point of the TARDIS. And you don't want to create a dynamic where you no longer need one of the main, like, established things about this show. So I don't think... So this is where we'll see who's proven right and who's proven wrong. I don't think they're going to be without the TARDIS too much longer. I think they kind of need it to continue their adventures.
Give me an episode. What episode do we get?
I think next episode. I think they find it next episode.
Okay, so episode two. I'm going to say that we have to wait until episode six.
Wow. Okay. We shall see. But yeah, so. I mean, I don't think it's hard to tell where we fall on this one. I think we were both over the moon, over the dragon egg, space dragon egg.
Yep. Over the hatching egg.
This episode, it met all my expectations. A couple of nitpicks, but overall, I was thrilled. I love the characters. I love the new doctor, and I don't see why that would change with upcoming episodes, just based on the tone and the writing and the acting. I'm really excited about the potential, and I love these longer episodes. So yeah, man, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm stoked. It was a fun episode to sit and watch. I wouldn't say I'm done watching this episode. I might actually watch it like two more times. Probably. I know one for sure. And I might sneak in another one before the next episode comes on, but there's so much to like. The characters are awesome, and the tone, the music. I mean, there's some solid mood music in there.
The music didn't pop out to me too much.
No?
I felt like with previous versions of the Doctor, we had some very specific themes that kind of stuck out. I mean, I can't even get that out of my head, like with the 11th Doctor on the rooftop.
Yeah.
You know, the dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun. Like, I just feel like that was such an epic theme, and it came around whenever it needed to be there, and I never heard that moment in this episode. I never got like that music cue that popped in that got me, just kind of gave me goosebumps. It might just be a matter of getting used to the new composer.
When the Doctor stands up after falling through the roof, there is a slight Doctor theme that comes through.
Okay.
And it's solid. And then the rest of the episode, it's very like electronic and very moody. It reminds me a lot of Stranger Things soundtrack. Mm. Not as like 80s. What are those called? Anyways, it's not exactly Stranger Things, but it has that same tone to it. I'm digging it. It's pretty good. Last thing. Where is it in my notes? Oh dang. Cuppa and a fried egg sandwich.
Yes.
I'm all about that. I'm ready for my cuppa and a fried egg sandwich.
Yeah, I like a good fried egg sandwich, so I'm on board with it. Better than cool. Fish sticks and custard.
Yeah.
Not sure I could stomach that.
No. Okay. Anyways, I'm good.
Sweet. Well, we are excited. The next episode is actually going to be on Sunday at 8 p.m. I believe, so they are not keeping that weird 1:45 airtime, which I was kind of wondering if they were going to. So we will get back to a kind of a more normal evening time slot, but on Sunday rather than Saturday, what we're used to.
Yeah, so, I'm kind of bummed about that, but I'll make it work.
Yeah, yeah. It's just one more day, or one less day, we have to prep for the episode.
You know that's right.
But... yeah, so for now we will wrap it up, and we're really excited to talk about more Doctor Who, more Bad Wolf Radio episodes are going to be happening more frequently now, obviously, for the next however many weeks, I guess, they give us straight episodes. So between now and the next episode, you can always find us on iTunes, you can leave us a review over there, you can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio, we have our Facebook group that I'm imagining is going to get a little bit more active. right now with all the stuff going on, Bad Wolf Podcast, and Instagram at Bad Wolf Radio. And until next time,
later days.